drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome to episode 4. We're speaking with Leah Van Aert. Leah is a church secretary by day and a writer, illustrator, and creator by night. Most often, she writes at her blog, My Favorite Adventure, about book recommendations, weekend getaways, daily life, and everything else in between. She recently married her high school sweetheart. She reads voraciously and loves to eat sushi. So, Leah, tell us a little bit about your life now and how you got here and wound up on this crazy podcast.
All right. So I'll start at the beginning. I kind of grew up in, I grew up in central Wisconsin, born and raised here. Still live here. I will probably stay here for the rest of my life. I love it. Not such a big fan of the snow, but I've dealt with it this long, so might as well get used to it. I grew up in a very creative home. I played several instruments. I sing. My parents very much fostered a love of creativity in my siblings and I. And I started writing in high school, actually, not until my senior year when I enrolled in creative writing on a whim when I needed another credit. And my teacher really brought out a love of writing in me and helped me develop my craft once I decided that I liked it. So when I graduated high school, I went to University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, about 30 miles away from my hometown, so I didn't go very far, but I got my degree in English, so I did that because I like writing, I like reading, I like analyzing literature, so that's what I decided to do, and I had a great time doing it, and that's when I started my blog and got married shortly after, and now I'm working full-time, blogging part-time, doing photography when I can, and stuff like that. So that's how I got here.
Well, awesome. That sounds like a nice, full life so far. I know both Ashley and I also have English degrees. So, and I think, if I remember right, Ashley, you went to college for the same reasons. You liked reading and writing and wanted to do something with that.
Yep, it's just one of those, it's the standard English major answer, like, well, I like to read and didn't know what else I wanted to do, so it seemed like a good bet.
Yeah, chemistry was out. I just knew that off the bat. I mean,
so did you get the question of, do you want to teach a lot? That's all I got every time I said I was an English major.
Oh, yeah, I heard that one all the time, and I was always like, no, I want to go into publishing. Teaching would be like my last resort.
That's hilarious. I actually set out to go back to school to be a teacher at one point, and after a few classes was like, nope, not going to teach, just going to do this English thing and see where it takes me. But I actually started college to be an architect, so I got to an English major in a really weird way. Calculus and I decided we were not going to be friends, and I, you know, dropped the dreams of architecture at that point. Okay, so you said your parents fostered a lot of creativity in you and your siblings. Do, like, all of your other siblings, I don't know how many you have semi-creative careers, or is it just you?
I have an older brother and sister, and then I have a younger sister. And my older siblings, my brother is actually an engineer, my sister is a nurse, and my younger sister is, she's currently in college getting her Bachelor's of Fine Arts in art, with an emphasis on 2D design. So she's a painter and a drawer. I don't know if that's the right word.
It is, but it always comes out more like drawers, like underwear. I don't know.
Yeah, the older two didn't really stick with it growing up, but my sister and I definitely have, so.
Oh, that's awesome. It must be fun to be part of such a creative family, because then I suppose you all kind of work together and support each other when you're coming up with all those crazy ideas that we know we all have way too many of and never follow through on.
Most definitely. I know. I think I'm the black sheep in my family. I don't know, is it anyone else likes to, like, in an extreme amount, read or write or draw or anything like that. So
yeah, I'm the same in my family. I'm kind of the oddball out there.
Yeah, it's nice to be amongst people that are like me, because otherwise, oh my gosh, like when my sister started college and she told people she was an art major, everyone's like, how do your parents feel about that? No, I like it. So
well, good. I know you mentioned you started your blog in college and then continued blogging through the end of college, when you started a new job, when you got married. What was it really like to blog through all those different life transitions?
Oh, it was very interesting. It's always changing. Like, the topics that I write about are always changing just because my life is. Before I had my favorite adventure, I had a Zanga site for a while, and then I've always been on Tumblr, so I did microblogging, and I had a photography blog for a while, just basically as a portfolio. And when I started actually liking to write instead of just putting up pictures, that's when I started my favorite adventure, and that's where I gave myself more creative freedom, I guess. So it's been very interesting. Like, I took my computer on my honeymoon so I could upload some blog posts. So yeah, it's fun. And yeah, it's always different, always changing.
How did your, you know, new husband feel about that? Was he like 100% supportive, or was he like, why are we even here?
Yeah, he gets it. We've been together for so long through all of this, and we were friends before we started dating. He just knows when Leah's got to do something, Leah's got to do something. If she's got to upload a vlog to put on a blog post, she's just got to do it. He loves it. He's very supportive of my blog. I don't think he reads it really, which I hope he doesn't, because sometimes I talk about, like, Christmas gifts for him, stuff like that. So he likes it. He's very supportive.
That is great. I know my husband admitted a few months ago that he doesn't always read all of my posts. And I was like, I didn't know you read any of them. So woohoo.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't think Tyler would be very interested in the stuff I write about. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yep, same here. So what about your husband, Ashley? Does he read any of your blog?
Oh my gosh, not at all. Like, my husband thinks I'm insane for having, like, meetups at coffee and, like, talking to you guys right now, because you're, like, the internet people who might secretly be serial killers.
Oh, I love it. That's great. I'm pretty sure Scott has thought that about me too. Like, really? More internet people? But it works. I don't know. You make friends differently now that you're a grown up in the internet world.
I know. I'm like, no, really, they're real people. I just met them on Twitter, but they exist.
I promise, none of their posts sound creepy. I mean, it's, what do you do? Yeah,
seems legit.
I agree. So Leah, we'll try to bring this back around. How's that? You work full time. You said you are a church secretary, and then you also have all of these other side projects. I know you mentioned that you blog and you do photography and you illustrate. Like, how do you find, or how do you even make time to really be creative, even after, like, your day job has kind of sucked the energy on out of you?
Well, I have to make time for it, otherwise I won't. I'm a planner. I schedule not every second of my day, but a good portion of my day. So I literally will write in my planner, like an hour set aside for writing on my blog, or an hour set aside for doing illustration. So if I don't do that, I'm more apt to just sit in front of Netflix and zone out, or just read until I fall asleep in my chair. So I try to do something creative every day, otherwise I start to feel drained from my day job. Even though I love it, it's still draining. So it definitely helps So I try to do something creative every day.
Yeah, I like having that as a goal, that doing at least one creative thing every day, because I think sometimes we feel like we look at these overwhelming creative goals that we have, like, oh, write a book or something like that. And it's like, if you just break it down and think of it as doing one creative thing a day, it seems a little bit more manageable for those of us who are crunched for time.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I often think, like, at the end of the day, I don't have time or energy for creativity. But I love how you said you feel more drained if you don't make time for creativity, if you aren't creative each day. I think that's a really important distinction to make. And I think also once you kind of get in that groove, you feel more energized on a regular basis because, like you've said, you've set that time aside for yourself, your time to be creative, and you're just kind of doing the thing you want to do.
Right. Yeah. My husband does CrossFit and he never wants to go to the gym, but he always feels so much better afterward. And I feel the same exact way when I do something creative. I don't necessarily want to do it right away. I don't want to sit down and write all the time. But after I'm done, I feel like I'm just so energized. And so that's why I try to do something creative every day.
What sort of writing are you typically working on? Like, do you have a book in the works or anything like that? Or is it mostly just writing for the blog? Like, what sort of projects are you working on that way?
I mostly write for my blog. I'm developing some new stuff for the new year that isn't all quite together. But I write in, like, I journal a lot, and I still feel like that is important writing. I used to not think that it is, but I'm learning more and more that it's important. So I do a lot of journaling. I do a lot of writing for my blog. I don't know if I'll ever write a book. If I did, it'd probably be nonfiction. I'm not very good at fiction writing, but who knows? Maybe someday.
It's great to leave that open-ended.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned journaling, because we just interviewed Kenzie from Hello Neverland a couple of weeks ago, and she's really big into journaling. And so we talked a lot about how, like, it's so easy for you to think that that more personal creativity doesn't matter. But really, like, as long as it's something that gives you energy and that fuels your creativity, like, it's worthwhile.
Yeah, for sure. I was just going to say, I get a lot of she does journaling prompts a lot, and I find that it really helps me to get the wheels turning, because if I just sit down with a blank piece of paper and start to write about my day or something, it just gets so boring. But yeah, I love her. I love her posts.
Oh, that's great. It's like our little internet world all coming together.
Yes, it's coming full circle.
So you mentioned that you're really organized when it comes to blogging. So is that what helps you stay consistent? Because you're, like, we've both noticed that you're a very consistent blogger, which is something I personally fail at. but you blogged for 30 days straight in September for Blogtember. And so is that organization what helps you stay so disciplined and consistent?
I think so. And it's actually funny. I never thought of myself as a consistent blogger until I saw that question. And I'm like, I looked back through my archive and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am pretty consistent.
That I find that hilarious that you didn't even notice you were consistent, because that was my entire goal of 2015, was to blog every Tuesday and every Thursday, whether or not I felt like it. So
definitely being organized helps me out a lot. I haven't been the best lately at pre-scheduling my posts, but I find that when I get in a groove of getting things done ahead of time, that really helps, and scheduling out my social media posts and taking pictures ahead of time so I don't have to rush last minute to do it. That is definitely helpful with staying consistent.
So did you ever throughout that 30 days kind of feel like you wanted to quit? And if so, how did you convince yourself not to?
For sure. Yeah. I did Blogtember 2 years in a row. And the first year was kind of sketchy. But this past September I was most consistent with not, like, doubling up on a day that I missed or anything like that. I started out the first couple weeks scheduling everything ahead of time. Like, I would do a week's worth at a time. And then that kind of fell apart and I got busy and I was writing until 11, which I was writing late, which 11 o'clock is late for me. I'm usually in bed at 9 o'clock. So, I was up late writing posts, and there was one day where I was visiting my best friend in Milwaukee, and I was at her apartment, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to write tomorrow's post later. Like, nobody's even going to notice if I don't do it. Like, it's not that big of a deal. She looked me in the eyes, and she said, Leah, you have done 20 days straight of blogging. You have to do this day. And I'm like, all right, you're right. It doesn't take that long. I can do it. So definitely, like, my husband a few times had to tell me, like, Leah, just take a half an hour, write the post. It doesn't have to be perfect. So yeah, I had people around me that were pushing me on. Otherwise, I probably would have quit 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, that's a great example of how having outside accountability can help you stay consistent and accountable to your own creative goals. Because I know that's one of the things where I'm always like, oh, I don't have time for this because I have a toddler and I'm working and I'm always really busy. And like, blogging is the first thing to go because it feels so unnecessary next to client work. And having that outside support, well, I was going to say pressure, but we'll call it support because that sounds nicer. That outside support to keep you on track is really important, I think.
Yeah, and I think that even though my friends and family might not necessarily understand blogging, I still don't think they've gotten it. I think they understand that writing itself is the important thing to me, not necessarily the platform. So yeah, it is really great to have people around that can, you know, light a fire under me when I need it.
I love how you said that your family may not even really understand blogging. I know my dad asked me a few months ago, I've been working at an advertising agency for over a year now. And he asked me, he's like, so what do you do? And I remember trying to explain like PR and social media to my father who doesn't have an email address. And that was really entertaining. So I can only imagine trying to explain blogging to him now that I think about it. I don't even think he knows that that's a thing. So
I don't think my dad knows what a blog is either. I don't even know if he knows that I have a website. Whatever.
That's great. What about you, Ashley? Are your parents at all involved in your creative endeavors?
No, not really. I still get stuck trying to explain that I get paid to write blog posts for other people and companies. And they're, you know, back to the whole, like, what's a blog? And it's like, well, it matters because people will pay me to write them. So
there you go.
Explaining how it all ties back in with marketing, you know.
Yeah. I suppose if you had a blog all about your daughter, they might pay attention, right? Is that the way you draw grandparents into the blogging world?
Yes, like the old, like Leah was saying, like the old Zanga style blogs that were very personal and like Dear Diary style. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's probably one of mine like out there still floating around and I don't even remember the URL for it, but it's still on the internet somewhere.
I tried finding mine, you know, a few months ago, actually. I couldn't even remember the URL. I couldn't remember my username. I had no idea, but I want to find it so bad.
It could be really entertaining or really scary to go back and read all of those, you know, teenage-infused emotional posts.
Yeah, I don't...
It is horrifying to think that those still exist.
Yeah, that might keep me up at night. So I know you said you grew up in a creative family, Leah, but back in Blogtember, I keep wanting to say Blogtober, like it's October, but Blogtober. So Blogtember, you wrote a post about the fact that you don't feel like a quote unquote creative. If you don't mind, I'm going to read what you said straight from your blog. You said, here's why I don't think of myself as creative. Almost none of my ideas are created organically. I can't remember ever having a moment of inspiration and coming up with an idea for a painting or blog series or interior design completely on my own. And you said that. I love you were willing to be really open and honest on a topic where a lot of people might not be, especially in a world where, you know, we prize creativity and the idea of the creative is like just the most romantic idea that we have these days. So how do you yourself kind of push publish on posts like that? How do you put that kind of thing out into the world when you may or may not get a little bit of a backlash?
That's a good question. I did have a hard time writing that one just because, like you said, being a creative is such a, I don't know, people put it on a pedestal sometimes as like people who are creative are, you know, these really fanciful, like, people that, like, have all these great ideas. And I think the reason I don't feel creative is because I don't necessarily want people to think of me that way. It's kind of a hard thing to live up to, I think. So especially now that the internet is a thing and so many people have had issues with people stealing their ideas or things like that, I'm always so open on if I've even gotten a teeny bit of inspiration from somebody else. I always tell people, like, hey, I read this post 4 months ago and it stuck in my mind, so here's a link to theirs. So I think I don't feel creative because I don't want to have to live up to that idea that people have of somebody who is creative.
Yeah, that's a really interesting distinction to make, because I actually just read a book called Creative You a couple months ago it sort of delved into the psychology of creativity, and it showed how some people feel like they're more creative than other people because they're drawn to what most of us think of as being creative, like the arts or something like that, when really there's this broad spectrum of creativity where like some people show their creativity through problem solving or through like manipulating things that already exist and making them better and improving on ideas that already exist. And then some people create like by writing on a blank page and creating things basically from scratch, which is what we tend to think of as creativity, but that's not necessarily the only definition we should be using and the only ideal we should be holding up for that life.
Yeah, I think after I wrote the post, that's when I started to think of myself as even being remotely creative. Because after I was writing it, and people started commenting and like, no, that means you're creative. Like, even if you don't get your ideas organically, like, everybody does that. Everybody draws inspiration from nature or other artists or anything like that. So I'm kind of coming to terms with it, but I still feel like it's such a big title to have.
It is. And I know I kind of agree with you, like the idea of like that creative who, you know, wears the black turtlenecks and, you know, reads all the philosophers and all those kinds of things. To me, it's just really hoity-toity and unpractical a lot of the times. And I remember reading once that creativity is just kind of connecting the dots in a way that they've not been connected before. So I think by like taking other ideas and pulling them into your own world and adding to them, I definitely think that's a creative way of looking at something. And I know I always found a lot of satisfaction in seeing patterns and connections that maybe other people around me didn't. And maybe that's me being a little, you know, unhumble. But I really didn't know why I was different than other people, especially in like my tiny hometown that I grew up in. But once I read that definition, that it's like connecting dots in different ways, I felt like I'd found my people. And I think that's when I decided that I was, you know, a quote unquote creative. I was someone who just looked at things a little bit differently. And I think with you admitting too that that is the way that you do look at things, you take other people's ideas and add to them, I definitely say you fit in this category. I suppose we wouldn't invite you onto a podcast called Chasing Creative if we didn't think you were, right?
Right. Yeah. Once that conversation started in the comment section, I'm like, you know what? I am going to call myself creative, even if I don't really think so 100%. I'll start with calling myself that. So I might have to write a redaction to my original post. Maybe that'll come in the future.
Well, when you do, you're going to need to share it with us.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's good to remember that being creative or acknowledging that you are a creative person doesn't necessarily have to mean that you have to live up to that standard that everybody else has for you, you know, wearing the turtlenecks and like living in a coffee shop every day because you don't have to go to work or something, or, you know. So you said that you, like all creatives, you get your inspiration from outside sources, as most of us do, I think. So what are some of your favorite places to find inspiration for blogging and illustration and photography?
I'm on Pinterest a lot. I'm that stereotype. I get a ton of ideas from Pinterest. I don't know what I did before it, honestly. I would never have had a spot to curate all my ideas. I wouldn't have any ideas. So Pinterest is one. Instagram, I feel like, has become more and more of an inspiration to me now, just because of the people that I follow, kind of treat it more than just a photography app. Like a lot of people I follow write mini blog posts, which I'm starting to lean toward that. I love it so much more now that people are taking it more seriously. So Instagram, definitely. I read a lot of blogs. I'm reading them all the time. So I definitely get inspiration from other people that way too. Nature as well. I love being outside. Whenever I'm doing art, like drawing or painting, that's what I always lean toward, is doing nature and capturing that. So, yeah, other people, nature, stuff like that.
So the world is your inspiration, right?
Yes, exactly.
I do love that people who tend to observe the world tend to be a little bit more creative. And I think it is that just kind of stepping out of their box and taking the time to notice things makes you a more creative person because you're a more observant person. And kind of dovetailing on all of this, have any of you read Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon?
Oh, been on my list forever. Just haven't gotten to it yet.
It's great. And you can finish it in like half an hour, 45 minutes or something. It's a pretty quick read. But he wrote Steal Like an Artist. And then the follow-up is Show Your Work. And I follow this guy. His blog is awesome. I probably retweet him too many times in a day. But if you haven't read Steal Like an Artist and you haven't read Show Your Work, do. They are great. And it just talks about how like no idea is original and everything is built on what has come before. And I think it's kind of the source of all creativity is the inspirations that have like led us to this point.
Yeah, I haven't read it either, but like you said, it's been on my list forever. And I think it's coming up closer to the top now. So I'll let you know when I read it.
Do that. Do you guys have any other books that you can think of that talk about like the creative life or whatever that you've read recently and really, really enjoyed?
I really like, I'm going to not remember the exact title now. Hold on. I will think of it. It's by Emily P. Freeman. I think it's A Million Little Ways.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not directly about creative living, but it's more so about how like all your ordinary actions in a day can sort of add up to a creative life, even if you don't feel like they are. It's more about finding purpose in the small things you do every day than in making some big grand creative gesture that feels overwhelming for most people. So that one goes top of my list.
That one has been on my list for a while too. I love Emily Freeman.
Me too, fangirl right here.
I've only read, what is it? Grace for the Good Girl.
Yes.
And I haven't read that one yet, but A Million Little Ways is next on my list from her. I'm currently reading Make It Happen by Laura Casey, and it's not necessarily about being creative either, but it's about unleashing your potential. And I think that for me, that's a lot about creativity, so I'm really enjoying that book a lot.
Yeah, that's another one that's been on my list. I was going to order the power sheets for this coming year, and then I was like, ooh, and I could get the book with it too. So we'll see. Maybe this will be the year I finally, you know, get the power sheets and grab the book and, you know, make it happen.
That is great. I know that one's been on my list too of ones to check out at some point. I actually have A Million Little Ways sitting on my bookshelf, and it's been there for like 6 or 8 months and I just haven't picked it up. So maybe I need to go like do that immediately following this call.
Oh my gosh. You have to read it. It is so good. I read it twice within like the month I bought it because it was so good.
That is the telltale sign of a good, good book.
Seriously. I'll have to get that one.
This last year, Leah, you also joined the Illustrated Faith team. And I didn't know that Illustrated Faith was like a thing. I didn't know that, you know, I guess doodling, is that the right word, in your Bible had like a whole movement built around it. I thought I was just an oddball and doodled in the margins. Can you tell us a little about how that happened and what it's been like writing regularly scheduled posts for another publication?
Yeah, I actually didn't know that Illustrated Faith was a thing either until this last year. I saw it on Pinterest when I was browsing, and I'm like, you know what? That's really cool. But then I put it to the back of my mind because I'm like, I'm not that good at drawing. I don't really paint that much. Like, I don't know how to do hand lettering. So I'll leave it to the professionals. And then I kept seeing it and I kept seeing it. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to order myself a journaling Bible and I'm going to try it. And so I ordered my Bible and ended up being a pre-order that didn't show up until 8 months later. And I know it was...
Talk about squashing motivation.
Exactly. So the whole time I was, you know, following these people on Instagram that posted these pictures of their beautiful pages in their Bible. And then I finally got mine in the mail. And I had seen that there was a workshop in St. Paul, Minnesota, in the next month or so. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go. It'll be a great way to get started, see if I like it. I might not even like it. So I went, and a few days earlier, they had put out a call for contributors to be on the creative team. And I'm like, oh, that'd be cool, but I can't apply because I don't have any pictures to show them. So I'm like, well, next time. And then I got an Instagram message from Shauna Noel, who started the whole movement. And she's like, hey, Leah, I just saw that you posted a picture of your new Bible. Have you applied for the creative team? And I'm like, no, I've not even made a mark in my Bible yet. I'm like, so I messaged her back. I said, I haven't, but does that mean you want me to? And she said, yes, I think you should. So I did, and I got picked. And I had made one entry in my Bible when they picked me. And I'm amongst all these women who are like scrapbookers and like they make these beautiful drawings and all that. And I'm just like, I'm brand new to this, but it's so much fun. So I guess maybe I should have explained what it is before all of this. So like you said, Illustrated Faith is basically just coloring in your Bible or writing in your Bible or doodling, stamping, using markers, whatever you want. So it's been a very fun ride.
Could you talk a little bit about, like, is there a difference between a journaling Bible and a regular Bible? Like, do they have thicker pages or something? So usually Bible pages are, like, really, really thin. And, like, or is it just, like, a particular Bible that you designate for doodling in?
Well, there are people who use just regular, like, study Bibles, but journaling ones have the 2-inch margins around the outside. The pages are slightly thicker, but not really, so you can still, like, trace through them, like, that's how thin they are. So that's basically the only difference is just there's just space on the outside to make marks in.
Well, that is neat. So now you're writing a couple of posts a month for Illustrated Faith, so doing regularly scheduled posts somewhere other than your own blog. How have you kind of worked that into your blogging rotation? Like, do those posts take priority first thing in the month, or do you wait until the last minute to do them? I know I would.
My first month that I started posting for them, I wrote my two posts ahead of time, and I was, you know, being a overachiever. But then last month, I completely forgot about writing them, so I was doing it the night before. But yeah, it's the first time I've ever regularly contributed to another website, so it's definitely taken some getting used to. At first, I was like, but I want to write for my own website. And then I'm like, wait, I'm still writing. It's just on a different page. So it's taken a little bit of getting used to, but... I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, that's awesome. It's great that such an like a cool opportunity came to you at the exact same time that you were thinking about getting started in Bible journaling. So have you come away with anything from the actual experience of Bible journaling that surprised you at all before you got started in it? Or do you have any tips for anybody who's like, oh, that sounds kind of neat. Maybe I want to get started in that.
Yeah, I've actually come away with it with a lot more than I thought I would. I thought it would just be a fun way to get back into actual art. I used to be in art classes in high school and junior high doing painting and drawing and all that, and then that kind of fell by the wayside in high school and in college. So I'm like, you know what, I'll break out my colored pencils again. It'll be fun. I might not like it. I might not be very good at it, but I ended up really, really liking it, and it's one of my favorite parts of my day now. I try to do it every day, but it doesn't really happen all the time. It's just being a creative person, and growing up, I grew up in church, and I've tried a million different ways of doing Bible study before. You know, writing my thoughts out or highlighting different ways or like doing different kinds of studies. But this is the first time that I've ever really felt like I'm connecting. And it's so funny that it comes through this avenue because there's a lot of people who are very against the Illustrated Faith community because they feel like it's defacing the Word of God and you're not being, you're not keeping it sacred and all that. But you know, I never had a thought in my mind that would think of it as negative because if it's helping me connect with God is what I want it to do and that's what's happening, then I don't think that's a bad thing at all. So it's interesting. I never thought that it would be this important to me now, but I really love it and it's made a huge difference in my faith.
Well, that is neat. I keep thinking that I need to try this sometime, so I might have to go Google journaling Bibles when we get off this call as well. You guys are giving me like quite the laundry list of things to go look up as soon as we stop talking.
Yeah, you're coming up with this whole list of resolutions for 2016 now, aren't you?
That's about it. So I still haven't settled on mine yet. And I have to say, we're on the call right now. It is, what, December 29th?
Yeah.
So we're doing this interview. We're all thinking about New Year's resolutions. So sorry if this is debuting in February and we sound like we're just really behind the times.
That's okay. February is probably about when I'll be solidifying my goals for the year anyway.
I think that's when I did it last year too. So, okay. In addition to Illustrated Faith and your own blog and, you know, working full time and being a newlywed, you also are a photographer. How on earth do you make time to go out on shoots and sessions, and how did you even get involved in it in the first place?
Well, I started photography when I was 13, I think, is when I got my first camera, and I just, I don't know what I even took pictures of then. It was not good, and I learned more and more. I Googled a lot about different techniques and taught myself Photoshop through YouTube tutorials. I'm still not that good at it, but I can get by. And then in high school, I took traditional photography classes, so that really helped me with technique. And we were given like assignments where we had to either emulate a certain artist or a certain technique, and that really pushed me to learn more about my camera and the things that I like doing. And I learned that I really like portraiture, which is weird because I'm probably one of the most awkward people ever. So whenever I'm on photo shoots, I listen to myself talking to my model or whoever, and I'm like, Leah, you don't, just stop. Just stop talking. So I never thought that it'd be something where I'd have to learn how to communicate well, but you do. So in high school, my best friend and I started doing shoots together, mostly because we were always at each other's disposal, so we'd just model for each other, and then we started asking other people to help us out because we were getting sick of taking pictures of each other's faces, and that turned into, I think I did, the first like paid shoots I did were one of my family members needed family pictures. And I looked back at the pictures afterward, and I'm like, hey, these are actually pretty good. I bet you other people would pay me to do this. So I started doing that, and then Van, my best friend, she does weddings now almost exclusively, and I assist her with that. And I mostly do senior portraits now, so that season usually is during the summertime. So, like, I did one senior this year and several family shoots, but other than that, I don't really market myself as a photographer, so it's just pretty much word of mouth. Whoever hears about it, sure, I'll take your pictures.
Oh, it's fun that you're able to combine something that you love so much, though, with, like, something other people need. Like, people need their senior picture taken, so it's a really great way for you to help people that way and still exercise those creative muscles.
Yeah, and I think since I do it so few and far between, it's like I really have to push myself to, you know, remember all those poses that I came up with the last time I did senior pictures 6 months ago or stuff like that. So it's definitely a challenge every time I do a shoot because I'm not doing it consistently all the time. But yeah, it's super fun. It's definitely one of the more fun disciplines that I'm into.
Yeah. So how does a skill that you've learned in being a photographer influence other aspects of creative life? I know for myself, whenever I go out on a session or whatever, like I obsessively research and think that I know nothing. And I try to like really, really prepare myself and I get there. And like you said, you're awkward. You're making really weird small talk with most of the time strangers. And then you get done and you go look at the photos and it's just such a rush. You're like, yes, I did this thing and it didn't turn out horribly. It's awesome. So, I mean, how do you prepare, I guess, for photo shoots? And how does that influence like how you prepare for your blog or how you prepare for illustration? Faith.
I definitely going into a shoot, I always think that I'm starting over. So I'm always like researching the best way to use my camera and like how to do this and this and how to make sure you're getting the best quality and different posing ideas. I'm like, and then once I get there and I start actually doing it, I'm like, wait, like this is all coming back. I know this. I don't have to reteach myself everything every time. Even though I still do. So yeah, to prepare, I usually am freaking out a little bit. I'm obsessively checking my equipment to make sure that nothing malfunctioned in the last month since I picked it up. And yeah, looking through Pinterest for posing ideas and then forgetting them once I get to the shoot because why would I remember stuff that I researched?
Or, you know, more accurately, you know, the 3-year-old is having a meltdown and doesn't want to sit on mom's lap and all of that kind of thing. There's so many external factors, I think, that make it a little bit different than blogging, which is completely dependent on you for every single post.
Yeah, exactly. I think I don't really prepare myself for posts, really. I guess that now that I think about it, I have tons and tons of drafts in my folders of half-written posts and just titles of things that some of them I have no idea what I was thinking when I wrote them. And most of them never get written, but sometimes I go back to them and I actually write them, but I don't really prepare for stuff like that. I just fly by the seat of my pants, take a few days, let it sit, go back and edit it, hope that it's still good, and then hit publish.
I am beginning to think that we might be the same person, Leah. This is a little creepy. Yes, me too. There's probably, I don't know, like 30 some random drafts on my WordPress site that I'm like, I thought that was a good idea, and now I have no idea what it is. Do you do it too, Ashley?
Yeah, I actually just went through and cleaned out all my drafts because I'm on a blogging break right now for a month or so. And I was like, this will be a good time to like get rid of some of these half-baked ideas that are never going to happen.
I really need to do that. I have so many and I have like notes in my phone that I look at them and I'm like, I think this was supposed to be a blog post idea. I have no idea what I was thinking.
I have like 40 notes in Evernote that are titled blog post idea and like nothing differentiates them. I'm like, so I need to open every one.
Yes.
So now is usually when we do our book club time. And I think I kind of preempted us by talking about books earlier this time around. Do you guys have any books right now that you're reading that you absolutely adore?
Let's see. Well, I'm currently reading 4 books. I can't not read multiple books at a time. I usually read one of, everyone's a different genre, so whatever I'm feeling that day, I pick up. I'm reading, the one I'm liking the most, I think, I'm really liking Make It Happen, but I already talked about that one. I'm reading a book I randomly picked up at the library. It's called The Perfectly Imperfect Home, and it's by Deborah Needleman, and she is a, I don't even know if she's like a professional interior designer. She wrote for some magazine that was a design magazine, and now she has this book, and it's all like different design tips and like tools of the trade, and all of it is illustrated, like hand-drawn, And I think it is so cool to look at. Like, they take, she took, like, pictures to illustrate, like, certain ideas she was talking about of, like, famous people's, like, living rooms, because they did this very well. And then she takes a picture and she draws it. And I think it's so cool. Well, actually, I don't know if it's her that does the illustrations. Somebody does. And I think it's awesome. And I'm just, like, flying through it. I think it's so cool.
Oh, that sounds like a really awesome book and really unique, too. Like, what are the chances you would pick up something that's such a winner just randomly at the library?
Yeah, I don't know the last time I got a winner like that.
I'm glad I'm not the only person who reads four books at a time, because that's my usual pace of reading. It takes me forever to get through one book because I'm always switching between them. But right now I'm actually reading the Divergent series, and that's getting my full attention. Like, way more of my full attention than it should have. I think I'm like halfway through the second one right now, and I started reading them 2 days ago, so I'm making good time.
Have you read them before?
No, I don't usually read, like, I like young adult literature, but I don't usually read dystopian for whatever reason. It usually just kind of creeps me out. But my husband got the Divergent movies as part of his stocking stuffer this year. So we watched them and I was like, these are really good. And I didn't want to wait for the third movie to come out in like however many years. So I'm like, I need to just read the book. So this is actually the first time that I'm like reading a popular book after I've seen the movies. Yeah, it's a little trippy, like, because normally I'm that person who's like, no, I must read the book first, but it's been okay. It hasn't totally ruined my experience, so I'm really loving them.
I read those books a few years ago and really enjoyed them, and then heard they were coming out with movies, and then I heard that the first movie was nothing like the book, and so I have, like, subconsciously, I guess, refused to watch the movies. So if you tell me once you're done reading all the books whether or not you liked the movies, still let me know.
I think the movies are probably still worth watching. Like, I thought the first one was pretty consistent with the first book. What did you think, Leah? Have you experienced both book and movie?
Yeah, I did. I read them in college. I devoured the books. I loved them. And I didn't really like the movies that much, but I do feel like they were pretty consistent. The timeline's a little off. I think that's the only thing. Everything happens much more quickly. But I did like the movies. I think as standalone, I liked them, not as a remake of a book necessarily.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I do not know how you guys read multiple books at the same time. I cannot do that. I marathon sprint through every book that I read, and which really, really sucks if I get like bogged down in a book and I don't want to read it, because then I don't read anything else. I just stop reading for a while. So maybe that's a strategy I should reexamine. But I, over the holiday weekend, sprinted through two book club picks for next month. Our book club actually decided to give you the option of what book to read, which I thought was interesting. I'm very interested to see how it works out when we go to discuss them, it or both or whatever. But I read both of them, and it was Leanne Moriarty's Big Little Lies, which was amazing. It's like this mystery, yes, that just slowly unfolds, and then all of a sudden it's like, boom, the answer is there, and you're shocked, and it was great. And then I also read Me Before You. I'm like far, far, far behind the rest of the world on this one, but it was excellent. So read both of those.
Oh, Me Before You. I was sobbing in bed when I finished that book. I literally had to stop, put the book down, and catch my breath. Well, I'm emotional to begin with. I cry at everything. But oh my gosh, I have never read a book that I was literally sobbing. So that, yeah, that happened.
Yes, I also cried awkwardly in the backseat of the car as my husband was driving us home from Kansas and my dad was sitting in the shotgun, like, navigating. So I was, like, trying not to sob enthusiastically and just, like, batting my eyeballs discreetly. And my husband looks at me, and I cry in books all the time. And he's like, do you need a Kleenex?
I have a similar story. We, on our way home from our honeymoon, Tyler was driving us home from Arkansas, and I was reading Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell.
Yes.
And Oh my gosh, the ending again. I was sobbing. And he just looks over at me and he's like, what is going on? Like, he knows that I'm emotional, but I don't think he's ever seen me cry that much from a book.
Yeah.
And he does not understand
how
into books I get. And I'm just sitting there, like, with my eyes closed, leaning back against the seat, just, like, tears streaming down my face.
I'm like, oh. He's thinking, like, his new wife is broken.
Yes, he's like, what did I do?
I'm pretty sure husbands in general do not understand, like, what happens when you finish a book and you're, like, sitting there crying, or then, like, you have a book hangover from it for, like, a week and you're like, I want to read something new, but I can't because my heart is still with those characters. And
I showed him a cartoon the other day that I found on Tumblr, and it was this girl, and she was crying because she's reading this book, and she's like, this book is ruining my life. And her friend is like, so why are you still reading it? And she goes, I love it. That's so me.
It's very, very accurate. And no, Ashley, you are going to need to prepare yourself for the book hangover you're going to have after finishing the Divergent series. So,
oh my gosh, I
get
know.
Prepped.
And actually, I already know the big twist that comes in book three. Well, because I never read dystopian, you guys. Like, never, ever, ever. So everybody's talking about it when the book first came out. And I was like, oh, I don't really care if I get spoiled on this. There's not a chance I'm ever going to read these books. And then, like, even though it was a couple of years ago, I still happened to remember it. So I was like, I know what's coming, but that's okay. I'm still very emotionally invested.
Yeah, I spoiled the ending for myself, too. I was Googling, and it auto-filled for me what I was Googling with who dies. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just ruined everything.
Oh no.
Don't Google.
That's horrible.
So it was bad. I'm so sorry for both of you. I loved reading those books without knowing the ending. I've had, like, arguments with people over whether or not it was the correct ending. So let me know when you're done and we'll argue, Ashley.
Yeah, I'm sure there's pretty strong opinions on both sides of that.
Yeah.
Although I just ordered the third book off Amazon, and I did catch part of it was a 1-star review, and it was like, read this book if you want your heart to be destroyed forever. It's like, all right, I'll read it.
Oh my goodness, that's like the perfect Amazon review. I love it. So do you guys tend to go on Amazon and write reviews from books that you've read?
Sometimes I will if I, like, sometimes I'm on the launch team for books because I sign up through the publisher. So then, of course, I want to make sure I write a review for them. Or if it's an author I particularly love and I don't feel like many people have heard of, I will. If it's, like, the world's most popular book and everybody already knows that it's amazing, I don't usually take the time.
Yeah, I think I can count on one hand how many times I've written Amazon reviews, just because... Yeah, if there's already hundreds of them, then what's the point?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I tend to, like you said, Ashley, try to write reviews for authors who maybe aren't as popular or who I know personally, and, like, having a review, like, means the world to them. But I won't necessarily, like, go on and review, you know, All the Light We Cannot See. I think that one's been done already. So,
yeah. Yes, definitely.
Well, really, this is kind of the end of the interview, Leah. We don't have any more questions for you. Is there anything you are, like, burning to say before we get off the line here?
I don't think so. You guys chose a lot of different topics to talk about, so I think you've gotten a pretty good idea of the many aspects of me.
That is
great. Yeah, well, and if you want to, you can also let people know where they can find you around online at your website and social media and all that. We'll have it in the show notes, but it's good to remind people here too.
Yeah, I write at myfavoriteadventure.com. That's where you can find me most of the time. I'm pretty active on Instagram and Twitter. My usernames everywhere is Leah Vanert. So yeah, find me.
We will do that. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Leah, and we hope that you have a wonderful summer chasing your creative.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.